Like a Bad Dream by Heinrich Boll. That evening, we had invited the Zumpens over for dinner. Nice people. It was through my father-in-law that we had got to know them. Ever since we have been married, he has helped me to meet people who can be useful to me in business, and Zumpen can be useful. He is chairman of a committee which places contracts for large housing projects, and I have married into the excavating business. I was tense that evening, but Bertha, my wife, reassured me. The fact, she said, that he's coming at all is promising. Just try and get the conversation round to the contract. You know it's tomorrow they're going to be awarded. I stood looking through the net curtains of the glass front door, waiting for Zumpen. I smoked, ground the cigarette butts under my foot, and shoved them under the mat. Next, I took up a position at the bathroom window and stood there, wondering why Zumpen had accepted the invitation. He couldn't be that interested in having dinner with us. And the fact that the big contract I was involved in was going to be awarded tomorrow must have made the whole thing as embarrassing to him as it was to me. I thought about the contract, too. It was a big one. I would make 20,000 marks on the deal, and I wanted money. Bertha had decided what I was to wear. A dark jacket, trousers, a shade lighter, and a conservative tie. That's the kind of thing she learned at home and at boarding school from the nuns. Also, what to offer guests. When to pass the cognac, and when the vermouth, how to arrange dessert. It is comforting to have a wife who knows all about such things. But Bertha was tense too. As she put her hands on my shoulders, they touched my neck, and I felt her thumbs, damp and cold, against it. "It's going to be all right," she said. "You'll get the contract." "Christ," I said, "it means 20,000 marks to me, and you know how I need the money." "One should never," she said gently, "mention Christ's name in connection with money." A dark car drew up in front of our house. A make I didn't recognize, but it looked Italian. "Take it easy," Bertha whispered. "Wait till they've rung. Let them stand there for a couple of seconds, then walk slowly to the door and open it." I watched Mr. and Mrs. Zumpen come up the steps. He is slender and tall, with greying temples, the kind of man who, 50 years ago, would have been known as a ladies' man. Mrs. Zumpen is one of those thin, dark women who always makes me think of lemons. I could tell from Zumpen's face that it was a frightful bore for him to have dinner with us. Then the doorbell rang, and I waited 1 second, 2 seconds, walked slowly to the door, and opened it. "Well," I said, "how nice of you to come!" Cognac glasses in hand, we went from room to room in our apartment, which the Zumpens wanted to see. Bertha stayed in the kitchen to squeeze some mayonnaise out of a tube onto the appetizers. She does this very nicely. Hearts, loops, little houses. The Zumpens complimented us and our apartment. They exchanged smiles when they saw the big desk in my study. At that moment, it seemed a bit big even to me. Zumpen admired a small rococo cabinet, a wedding present from my grandmother, and a Baroque Madonna in our bedroom. By the time we got back to the dining room, Bertha had dinner on the table. She had done this very nicely too. It was all so attractive, yet so natural, and dinner was pleasant and relaxed. We talked about movies and books, about the recent elections, and Zumpen praised the assortment of cheeses. And Mrs. Zumpen praised the coffee and the pastries. Then we showed the Zumpens our honeymoon pictures, photographs of the Breton coast, Spanish donkeys, and street scenes from Casablanca. After that, we had some more cognac, and when I stood up to get the box with the photos of the time when we were engaged, Bertha gave me a sign, and I didn't get the box. For 2 minutes, there was absolute silence, because we had nothing more to talk about, and we all thought about the contract. I thought of the 20,000 marks, and it struck me that I could deduct the bottle of cognac from my income tax. Zumpin looked at his watch and said, "Too bad, it's 10 o'clock. We have to go. It's been such a pleasant evening," and Mrs. Zumpin said, "It was really delightful. I hope you'll come to us some evening." "We would love to," Bertha said, and we stood around for another half minute, all thinking again about the contract, and I felt Zumpin was waiting for me to take him aside and bring up the subject, but I didn't. Zumpin kissed Bertha's hand, and I went ahead, opened the doors, and held the car door open for Mrs. Zumpin down below. "Why," said Bertha gently, "didn't you mention the contract to him? You know it's going to be awarded tomorrow." "Well," I said, "I didn't know how to bring the conversation round to it." "Now look," she said in a quiet voice, "you could have used any excuse to ask him into your study. That's what you should have talked to him. You must have noticed how interested he is in art. You ought to have said, 'I have an 18th century crucifix in there that you might like to have a look at,' and then..." I said nothing, and she sighed and tied on her apron. I followed her into the kitchen. We put the rest of the appetizers back into the refrigerator, and I crawled about on the floor looking for the top of the mayonnaise tube. I put away the remains of the cognac, counted the cigars. Zumpin had smoked only one. I emptied the ashtrays, ate another pastry, and looked to see if there was any coffee left in the pot. When I went back to the kitchen, Bertha was standing there with a car key in her hand. "What's up?" I asked. "We have to go over there, of course," she said.
"Over where?"
"To the Zumpins," she said. "What do you think?" "It's nearly 10:30. "I don't care if it's midnight," Bertha said. "All I know is there's 20,000 marks involved. Don't imagine they're squeamish." She went into the bathroom to get ready, and I stood beside her watching her wipe her mouth and draw in new outlines, and for the first time I noticed how wide and primitive that mouth is. When she tightened the knot of my tie, I could have kissed her the way I always used to when she fixed my tie. But I didn't. Downtown, the cafes and restaurants were brightly lit. People were sitting outside on the terraces, and the light from the street lamps was caught in the silver ice cream dishes and ice buckets. Bertha gave me an encouraging look, but she stayed in the car when we stopped in front of the Zumpins' house, and I pressed the bell at once and was surprised how quickly the door was opened. Mrs. Zumpin did not seem surprised to see me. She had on some black lounging pyjamas with loose full trousers embroidered with yellow flowers, and made me think, even more than ever, of lemons. "I beg your pardon," I said. "I would like to speak to your husband." "He's gone out again," she said. "He'll be back in 30 minutes. In the hall, I saw a lot of Madonnas, Gothic and Baroque, even Rococo Madonnas, if there is such a thing." "I see," I said. "Well then, if you don't mind, I'll come back in 30 minutes. Bertha had brought an evening paper. She was reading it and smoking, and when I sat down beside her, she said, "I think you could have talked to her about it too."
"But how do you know he wasn't there?"
"Because I know he is at the Gaffel Club playing chess, as he does every Wednesday evening at this time." "You might have told me that earlier."
"Please try and understand," said Bertha, folding the newspaper. "I'm trying to help you. I want you to find out for yourself how to deal with such things. All we had to do was call up Father, and he would have settled the whole thing for you with one phone call, but I want you to get the contract on your own."
"All right," I said. "Then what we'll do, wait here 30 minutes, or go up right away and have a talk with her."
"We'd better go up right away," said Bertha. We got out of the car and went up into the elevator together. "Life," said Bertha, "consists of making compromises and concessions." Mrs. Dumpen was no more surprised now than she had been earlier, when I had come alone. She greeted us, and we followed her into her husband's study. Mrs. Dumpen brought some cognac, poured it out, and before I could say anything about the contract, she pushed a yellow folder toward me. "Housing Project Fir Tree Haven," I read, and looked up in alarm as Mrs. Dumpen at Bertha, but they both smiled, and Mrs. Dumpen said, "Open the folder," and I opened it. Inside was another one, pink, and on this I read, "Housing Project Fir Tree Haven Excavation Work." I opened this too, saw my estimate lying there on top of the pile. Along the upper edge, someone had written, in red, "Lowest Bid." I could feel myself flushing with pleasure, my heart thumping, and I thought of the 20,000 marks. "Christ," I said softly, and closed the file. And this time Bertha forgot to rebuke me. "Prost," said Mrs. Dumpen with a smile. "Let's drink to it, then." We drank, and I stood up and said, "It may seem rude of me, but perhaps you'll understand that I would like to go home now." "I understand perfectly," said Mrs. Dumpen. "There's just one small item to be taken care of." She took the file, leafed through it, and said, "Your price per square meter is 30 pfennigs below that of the next lowest bidder. I suggest you raise your price by 15 pfennigs. That way you'll still be the lowest, and you'll have made an extra 4,500 marks. Come on, do it now." Bertha took her pen out of the purse and offered it to me, but I was in too much of a turmoil to write. I gave the file to Bertha and watched her alter the price with a steady hand, rewrite the total, and hand the file back to Mrs. Dumpen. "And now," said Mrs. Dumpen, "just one more little thing. Get out your checkbook and write a check for 3,000 marks. It must be a cash check and endorsed by you." She had said this to me, but it was Bertha who pulled our checkbook out of her purse and made out the check. "It won't be covered," I said in a low voice. "When the contract is awarded, there will be an advance, and then it will be covered," said Mrs. Dumpen. Perhaps I failed to grasp what was happening at the time. As we went down in the elevator, Bertha said she was happy, but I said nothing. Bertha chose a different way home. We went through quiet residential districts. I saw lights in open windows, people sitting on balconies drinking wine. It was a clear, warm night. "I suppose the check was for Dumpen," was all I said, softly, and Bertha replied, just as softly, "Of course." I looked at Bertha's small brown hands on the steering wheel, so confident and quiet. Hands, I thought, that signed checks and squeezed mayonnaise tubes, and I looked higher, at her mouth, and still felt no desire to kiss it. That evening, I did not help Bertha put the car away in the garage, nor did I help her with the dishes. I poured myself a large cognac, went up to my study, and sat down at my desk, which was much too big for me. I was wondering about something. I got up, went into the bedroom, and looked at the Baroque Madonna, but even there I couldn't put my finger on the thing I was wondering about. The ringing of the phone interrupted my thoughts. I lifted the receiver and was not surprised to hear Zumpen's voice. "Your wife," he said, "made a slight mistake. She raised the price by 25 pfennigs instead of 15. I thought for a moment and then said, "That wasn't a mistake. She did it with my consent." He was silent for a second or two, then said with a laugh, "So, you have already discussed the various possibilities." Yes, I said. All right, then make out a check for 1,000. 500, I said, and I thought, it's like a bad dream, that's what it's like. 800, he said, and I said with a laugh, 600, and I knew, although I had no experience to go on, that he would now say 750, and when he did, I said yes, and hung up. It was not yet midnight when I went downstairs and over to the car to give Zumpin the check. He was alone and laughed as I reached in to hand him the folded check. When I walked slowly back into the house, there was no sign of Bertha. She didn't appear when I went back to my study. She didn't appear when I went downstairs again for a glass of milk from the refrigerator, and I knew what she was thinking. She was thinking, he has to get over it, and I have to leave him alone. This is something he has to understand. But I never did understand. It is beyond understanding.